17. After more hiking through what the wizards had dubbed Falling Wolf Forest, the path led them to a town. A smattering of nearly identical buildings was the backdrop for a set of nearly identical peasants doing obviously repetitive things. A man whittled. A woman kneaded dough. A child ran in a circle for no apparent reason. It was all clearly designed to be just convincing enough to be boring. A stack of damp hay here. A chicken darting across the street bare. A dilapidated ox cart tucked between two buildings. The wizard's eyes were drawn to the only interesting thing in the town. A blacksmith shop set in the center of the village, like a jewel in a setting. It wasn't a workshop so much as a large open pen with a rough awning overhead and a metal sign out front that said, "Ye Old Town Smithy." Beyond that, Philip couldn't make out any detail, just motion, flame, and rhythmic clanking noises. It was Philip's turn to drag the sledge, and he was good and tired of it. He didn't really mind so much, though, because he was also tired of not pulling the sledge at this point, so it made little difference. Philip chose not to slow down and lose momentum. He knew that the next step in the quest was to have the cursed chunk of ore he was dragging fashioned into some sort of weapon, so he assumed that the blacksmith shop was his destination. He leaned forward, the taut rope wrapped over his shoulder, resting on his full-length fur vest. The collar stood high, warming his ears. The sleeves had long since fallen away, and now were wrapped around his forearms like leg warmers on a dancer on the cover of a Jazzercise video. Jimmy approached the woman who was endlessly kneading a large lump of bread dough and asked,
"Pardon me, can you tell me, is this the town called Beaumore?"
Jimmy held no illusions about having a real conversation or about his courtesy even being noticed. He was polite out of habit. As with all of Todd's artificial creations, her response almost fit the question, but not quite.
"How can ye not know where ye are? This be the town of Beaumore."
Jimmy said, "Right, thanks," and moved on. They reached the blacksmith shop and left the sledge and its heavy cargo out front. They weren't particularly worried that anyone would try to steal it. Knowing how difficult it had been to get here, they would have enjoyed watching someone try. Under the awning, there was a smoking black pile of bricks with a fiery hole in the front, like a New York City pizza oven, only much hotter and slightly dirtier. All around, laid out on metal racks, there were metal implements, all clearly used to form more metal implements. Every vertical surface was covered with handmade hasps, hinges, nails, hooks, and horseshoes. In the center of the room, a tall man, with arms thicker than a normal man's legs, was using tongs and brute force to bend a glowing metal bar. Tyler took the lead in interacting with the blacksmith. He was over any pretense at playing along with the fantasy of this quest. They were not knights performing tasks to fulfill some prophecy. They were mice trapped in a poorly made maze, trying to find their way out as efficiently as possible. Pretending that this blacksmith was anything other than a pre-programmed puppet was a waste of time at best, and a source of entertainment for their tormentor at worst. The blacksmith stopped hammering the glowing metal and turned his soot-covered face to look at Tyler.
"Greetings, stranger," the blacksmith said. "How does this day find you?"
Tyler said, "We got the rock," and pointed over his shoulder toward the sledge that waited out front. The blacksmith put down his soot-encrusted tools and walked to a soot-encrusted basin, which seemed to be full of a mixture of equal parts water and soot. He washed his hands and dried them on a soot-black towel, saying,
"I am Inchgoer, skilled blacksmith and crafter of fine weapons."
Tyler said, "We got the rock." The blacksmith nodded as if listening intently, then said,
"Aye, 'tis a long journey to be sure. I'm certain you didn't come all this way without good reason."
Tyler said,
"We got the rock."
The blacksmith raised his eyebrows.
"I see. You've come to the right place. But sadly, I cannot help you."
Tyler rolled his eyes and made the motion of a yakking mouth to Gary, then repeated, "We got the rock!"
I know all about the prophecy,
the blacksmith explained.
But to make the weapon you need, I require certain raw materials. Materials that have not been available for quite some time, I'm afraid.
Tyler glanced back at Philip, who chuckled lightly. Tyler turned with a flourish, motioned toward the sledge with much fluttering of hands, bowed deeply, and said,
We got the rock!
Inchgower dropped the soot-soaked towel on the soot-covered floor and walked slowly past the wizards to the front of the shop. He gazed down in amazement at the dull gray lump of stone they had dragged all the way from the mine.
You have it,
he said.
You managed to procure the Diluine. I cannot believe it.
Gary said,
We got the rock.
I can handle this, Gary,
Tyler said. Inchgower spread his massive arms wide, turned to face the wizards, and said,
Gentlemen, I will make you your weapon.
He stood there, almost motionless, cycling through some small subroutine designed to make him seem less statue-like while he waited for the next bit of stimulus to which he would respond. Tyler looked back at the others, then looked at the cheerful, benevolent look on Inchgower's face. Tyler sighed.
What's the catch?
Inchgower laughed and seized Tyler by the shoulders, shaking him slightly.
We will need bricks. Lots of bricks, my friends. Come with me. There are wheelbarrows out back.
Sometime later, and several hundred yards away, the wizards stood beside a massive clay pit. They had found a seemingly endless row of recently sun-dried bricks that were just irregular enough to make it painfully obvious that Todd had only created a few of them, then endlessly replicated those. Much like Chicken McNuggets, the slight variations only made them seem more identical.
Fantastic, Philip said. Todd's going to try to work us to death.
Gary said,
Oh, I don't know. This might not be so bad. A little physical activity might be nice for a change.
Nice for a change?
Philip asked.
Doesn't hiking count as physical activity? Because it seems to me that's all we do anymore.
That's my point, Gary said, stretching his back, limbering up. We've been doing the same things over and over. Maybe this'll break up the monotony.
Ah, I see,
Philip said.
Stacking and hauling bricks seems like a source of variety and mental stimulation to you.
At least it'll work the upper body.
Gary said, stretching his hamstrings.
We haven't really been doing all that much with our arms.
Tyler asked,
What about sledge dragging?
And wolf stabbing?
Jimmy added.
Yeah, I see your point. Gary allowed. But you have to admit, we've been working the same muscle groups over and over. This'll give us a chance to hit some new ones. See my point?
The other three made eye contact for a moment, silently reaching a consensus. Then Philip said,
No, we don't.
Gary exhaled.
Look, I'm just trying to keep a positive attitude. Is that okay with you?
Again, they silently took a vote. Again, Philip spoke for the group.
No, it isn't.
They piled as many bricks as they dared into the two wheelbarrows, and, as was now their custom, took turns maneuvering them back to Inchgower's shop. Inchgower was waiting for them to arrive. He rubbed his hands together excitedly, generating a small cloud of soot in the process.
Good work. Well done. You can unload them right here.
Inchgower pointed to a specific bare patch of ground and made it clear that he would not move again until all the bricks were unloaded. No sooner had Jimmy placed the final brick on the stack than Inchgower sprang back to life, bustling around his shop, gathering certain tools he would need, and clearing workspace in the middle of the floor. Inchgower rummaged through his tool rack, and when he turned to them, he had four shovels that had seemed to appear from nowhere. He said,
Now, we're ready for the clay.
Later, they returned from the clay pits, carrying well-used shovels and fully loaded wheelbarrows. Their arms, like their tools, were coated up to their shoulders in a thin gray coat of cracking clay.
This stuff's gonna take forever to wash off,
Tyler complained.
Nah, Gary reassured him. I bet it'll dry and most of it'll crack off on its own. In the meantime, we'll all look like the thing. And that's always cool.
Yeah, Tyler said. That's what the thing was famous for. Looking cool.
They hauled the wheelbarrows full of wet clay to the rear of Inchgower's shop. Predictably, Inchgower was waiting for them with vague praise and specific instructions. They unloaded the clay in a sullen, exhausted manner, but they did it all the same. Inchgower stood almost motionless, pointing at the spot where they were piling the wet clay, waiting for them to finish. Jimmy was just about to gather the last shovelful from the wheelbarrow when he stopped. The others looked on, puzzled.
Come on, Philip said. Let's get this over with.
No, Jimmy said. Let's not get this over with.
He put down his shovel and sat in the shade for a moment. It did not take long for the others to get the idea. They rested for a while, ate some wolf jerky, explored the town a bit, and got a good night's sleep under the awning that formed the roof of Inchgower's shop. All the while, Inchgower stood silently, pointing to the clay pile, waiting for them to complete their task. When they were good and ready, they moved the last shovel of clay.
Well done, lads, Inchgower said. Now we can start making things.
Inchgower led them from the rear of his workshop to a spot out front and said,
We start by making a pile of bricks. Bring in the bricks, and I'll tell you how they should be stacked.
Tyler asked, Why can't we just stack them behind the shop where they already are? And already in a stack, for that matter.
He hadn't expected a real answer. But when Inchgower said,
There's a good lad,
it was particularly unsatisfying. Philip reminded him of the real answer.
Because Todd designed this whole thing to irritate us, remember? He knows we didn't become wizards or get into computers in the first place because we love manual labor.
The wizards took their time, but they did as they were told. Each time they'd return from out back with an armload of bricks, Inchgower would talk them through the process of stacking them. Soon they had a solid square base, 3 feet long and 3 feet wide, with the beginnings of walls that had small holes along the base.
Splendid, Inchgower said. Now, one of you will bring some of the clay to my work table, and the rest of you will continue building the walls. You should be able to keep going without instructions from here.
Jimmy, Gary, and Philip spent a good long time stacking the heavy bricks, building up the walls of whatever they were building. Inchgower instructed Tyler, most likely because he was standing closest to Inchgower at the time, to bring him some clay and place it on a work table. When the clay was on the table, Inchgower said,
More clay, please.
After several repetitions of this cycle, Inchgower thanked Tyler, then got to work. Work, in this case, meant moving his hands in a vague, repetitive manner so as to give the impression that something was getting accomplished without ever actually touching the clay. After a few seconds of this, the heap of clay disappeared and was replaced by some sort of vessel, like a crude pot made of soft clay, about 8 inches across and a foot tall, with thick walls.
If Todd can have all this crap done automatically, Gary asked, why are we having to do any of this?
Philip said,
To go into detail about the things the blacksmith has to do, the skilled labor, that would be extra work for Todd, so he glosses over it. The stuff that's extra work for us to do, the grunt labor, that's easy for him to just order us to do. So we're getting all that in exquisite detail.
When the brick structure was an almost perfect 3 foot cube, Inchgower stopped construction. He put the pot he'd made and a lid he'd quickly slapped together for it in his forge fire and closed the metal door.
We'll just let that harden for a while.
He turned his back to them, poking around his tool rack. When he turned back around, he had 4 large hand scoops.
In the meantime, lads, we'll be needing charcoal and plenty of it.
Hours later, they return from the surprisingly distant bonfire pit, dyed pitch black with coal dust, and pushing three wheelbarrows piled high with chunks of charcoal. They unloaded the charcoal, triggering Inchgower to tell them to pack clay around the walls of the cube, but to leave the holes in the cube's bottom accessible. Their arms had no strength left, so packing the wet clay onto the cube seemed to take forever. Their hands were caked with sweat, dust, clay, and soot, and they were too exhausted to care. Inchgower removed the crude cylindrical pot from his forge and told the wizards to get a good night's sleep.
"For tomorrow, you do battle."
Philip said,
"Yep, fair enough,"
as he settled into his bedroll. After the half second his brain needed to process what he'd heard, he sat bolt upright and asked,
"Wait, what? Do battle? We're not here to fight anything, we're here to make a weapon."
Inchgower nodded in inappropriate agreement.
"In order to complete my work, I will need a bone from a wretched beast known to the villagers as Strathaila. He comes once a fortnight to eat a villager. We have been quite powerless to stop it. You will slay the monster for us. I will consider that my payment for all of my work."
Gary asked, "Your work? You've been working?" But being essentially a recording, Inchgower ignored him.
"When you have killed Strathaila, bring me one of the beast's bones so I can channel its strength into your weapon."
Inchgower smiled like a doctor, telling a new father that he has a healthy baby.
"Sleep well, for as fortune has it, Strathaila attacks tomorrow."
The wizards reacted like a new father who had expected the doctor to tell him that his wife had appendicitis.